Welcome to the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast with your host, Andrew Keel. This is the podcast where you can get the education you need to invest 100% passively in the highly profitable niche of mobile home parks.
Welcome to the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Keel. And today, we have a commercial real estate investor and mobile home park owner, John Evans of Six Rock Properties, on the show. John Evans started his career in the oil and gas industry back in 2002 and bought his first mobile home park in 2015. He is now, in 2024, at over 600 lots. He is currently the chief project officer at Six Rock Properties, which was founded in 2014, and is a family-owned business that owns and operates manufactured housing communities from its headquarters in Charlotte, North Carolina. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, excited to dive into your background, learn about your path to mobile home park investing. Would you mind just starting out and just kind of take us back to, you know, oil and gas, 2002, and how you found that first deal?
Well, I kind of just grew up, you know, blue collar. My dad was a hard worker and traveled, and I kind of fell into that path. And typically, you're not really taught a lot about business or investing in that type of family. You're taught, good values, but just not really, the business world. And I just kind of always in the back of my mind thought, there's something else, to be had or to be done, And I had an uncle that had a lot of single family home rentals. And he never really spoke real highly about it, but he was always busy, and I knew he was pretty successful, and he owned his own business as well on the side. But and so I just thought, it would take a long time to buy all these houses, and they're going to be located all over the place, and I just I saw a trailer park, I said, well, look, I mean, you've got all these units at one location at one time.
Yeah.
And of course I asked a lot of people their opinions about it. And, of course, no, you don't want to buy a trailer park. What are you going to do that for? And, so fast forward a few years, and I just happened to, it was still in the back of my mind. And I was driving to work one day, and there's a trailer park, and there's a for sale sign in the yard. And so I just called the guy up, Yeah, well, first he thought I wanted to move into the park, And I was like, no, I was wanting to buy your park, So I kind of sat down. He invited me to his house, sat down in the living room, and, we kind of talked about it. And I tried to get a loan. Nobody wanted to loan on it. And eventually he financed it. So that kind of, it just got lucky. It was right there beside where I worked at, like right across the street.
Wow.
And, he financed it. So, fast forward, I ended up selling the park and making a profit, and it just kind of snowballed from there,
Wow. But and that was in 2015.
That was in 2015. Yeah.
And tell us, how many lots was that first one? What did it look like? Was it, lower end, more stabilized, value add?
It was stabilized. It was more on the affordable side, it was, but it was still a clean property. It was only 10 lots, which I did all myself. I was the plumber, and I was the AC mechanic, et cetera, So, I learned a lot on that deal, but it was small enough that you could handle something like that,
Sure.
But it was in a good location. It was direct bill, water, sewer.
That helps.
It just had a lot of good bones to it. It just worked out, So.
And tell us, what did you do to get educated? Did you know that direct build utilities, public utilities was a good thing? Or did you kind of get lucky on this one? Did you, how'd you get educated to know what you were doing from a due diligence standpoint?
It was all kind of learn as you go education. I didn't really know anything about the business. I didn't know CECO. I didn't know Frank and Dave. I didn't know none of that. I knew it seemed like a good deal because these are directly built. Handle that part. It's a good location. It was all full. I met all the tenants. They were all paying. The owner was willing to stay on to help, you know, so it just kind of all fit. But yeah, so I just basically just took the expenses, the debt, and there's a buffer, you know, so I went with it, you know. That's not how I would, you know, necessarily recommend doing it, but it, you know, it got me started. And
yeah,
you know,
that's a good way to start. Trial by fire. And tell me,
you
know, where are you now? Right. So you started with that 10 lot park. What has happened since then, you know, from 2015 to 2024?
Well, I still, at the time when I still owned that park, I was still kind of learning as I went. So I actually found another property in the same town that I lived in. So it was another good location.
Sorry, do you live in Charlotte then?
No, I actually live in Alabama, in Gulf Shores.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, that would make sense with the oil and gas, you know,
yeah, that's area there. On the Gulf Coast, that's, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I bought the second park, and I was running both of the parks, and everything was, you know, working out. And I just thought, I was like, I wonder if I could sell these for profit, you know? And so I actually did. I sold them. And then I don't know why, but I just kind of stepped back to kind of think about, you know, what I wanted to do next. I wanted to do something, but I didn't know what. So it was like a whole year went by where I was just kind of, you know, I was still working and just kind of scratching my head, you know, and that's when I found the Frank and Dave boot camp and Seco and all that stuff. So I went there, you know, kind of networked, met some people, started cold calling, and even then it took like another year before I bought another park. But you know, it was a turned out to be a home run, you know. So that's that kind of got me started, you know, the Seco and Frank and Dave, and just kind of learning as I go and learning from others, you know.
That's huge. Yeah. Seco is, I guess it started out as the Southeastern Community Owners Conference.
Yeah.
And then has now ballooned into like a national event for manufactured housing operators to go to. It's tons of, you know, classes, you know, breakout sessions and educational event, but also a lot of the vendors go there. Some of the manufacturers go there. So yeah, I'm a big Seco fan. Love that. And then obviously Frank and Dave, right? Like the top educators in the space. Frank was just on a couple episodes ago, and I mean, just a wealth of knowledge that he brings, you know, from his years in the space. So that's a great way to kind of dive in. And I mean, so you bought another park a couple years later, now you're at 600 lots, you know. Tell me, like, before we were recording, you were like, hey, you met someone at Seco networking, and he said, hey, this is my buy box. Go find some deals, bring them to me, and we can partner and we can work together. And that's exactly what you did.
Yeah. So that's basically, that's what he said. And that's what I did. So I started looking kind of in his backyard, you know, so to speak, not so much Charlotte, but you know, the Winston-Salem area.
Nice.
I'm close by. So that's, we own four properties right there in the Winston Metro. So
smart,
just kind of, you know, worked out. Yeah. And that was all during COVID to make it even harder, you know? Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's been, that's a great market. I wish I owned four properties in Winston-Salem.
And, you know, some of it is just timing. You know, the owner was ready to retire. He'd owned it a long time, ready to move on. And I just happened to call at the right moment, you know?
Yep. That's what it usually is. So what do you think is like the toughest hurdle to overcome in mobile home park investing? Like from your story, from your exposure, what has been like the toughest part for you?
I mean, for me personally, just kind of getting out of your own head as far as, you know, you're afraid of failure, you know, you don't want to, you've never done something like this before and you're afraid to fail, you know, so just kind of going for it, I guess, you know. Where, you know, as they say, analysis paralysis, you know, sometimes you just kind of got to go for it, you know? So I mean, that's, yeah. And like I said, it just wasn't really my background to be in that side of, you know, business and investing and so on, you know? So I was kind of going out there into the unknown, you know? But yeah, for me, that's probably it. It's kind of your own psychology, you know, trying to,
Getting in mindset.
Yeah, getting your mindset ready to just go for it. That's good.
Yeah.
That's really good. And from the nuts and bolts of owning mobile home parks, you know, it sounds like you are, you know, pretty good sales guy, right? You just get on the phones, you're building relationships with mom and pop owners, you're talking to them. I saw a post on LinkedIn where you've been talking to a mom and pop for years, and originally they thought your price was a low ball. And now they're actually saying, hey, we're actually willing to take that now, right? Several years later, they're sitting on their couch. So is that your strength, the sales side of it, the acquisition side of it? Or are you, you know, a nuts and bolts operator as well?
I think I'm just good at kind of relating to mom and pop because, you know, they, in my opinion, they're kind of both. They're kind of hardworking blue collar and they ran a business. So, you know, I just kind of relate to them, especially mom and pop that are hands on, that built the business. The park you're talking about, that's what they did. It was raw land and they did everything from laying the water and sewer. They bought paving equipment. They paved the streets. They did everything, you know? So I just can kind of relate to mom and pop, you know, as far as just being hands-on, you know, so.
Totally.
Yeah, and they have some good stories, you know.
They do.
About tenants and building the park and kind of almost the Wild West of, you know, mobile home park days, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of hashing it out with the city officials and whatnot, you know, so.
Yeah.
I don't think sales is my strength, just kind of relating to mom and pop, I guess, you know.
Yeah, that's good.
It's worked out so far.
That's really good. Yeah, you can never build too much rapport, right? Like just relating, being there at the right time is key too. You know, from a sales side of it. like they're one heart attack away from this being their most important priority is selling this thing. So I think that's important to know.
Yeah, and they will tell you their whole story. You know, but it's kind of just want you to listen. You know,
yeah. Tell us, like, you know, how you're getting deals done with higher interest rates. You know, how have you guys pivoted around that? Has your model changed? You know, are you, you know, what's your forte? What makes sense right now?
You know, it's tough to say. We bought a park in February last year. We used a local bank, but then we turned around and used Mercadia to refinance. So, you know, then they gave us, I'm thinking it was like 3.1%, I think. So, I mean, that works, you know, but you know, the local lenders, it kind of definitely makes it tough, but if you can, and then some of the parks, you know, we've kind of had them step in and hold some paper, you know, so, you know, even like sometimes they'll do like a 50%, you know, owner finance, you know, and just kind of come up with the rest. Yeah.
That's a golden nugget right there. And yeah, so how are you guys doing that? You have a primary lender and then the seller holds a second note? Something like that is what you guys are putting together?
Yeah, basically. Yep.
Yeah. And I've found it tough to find primary lenders that will allow the second behind. And one way we've been able to do it is say, hey, Mr. Seller, you know, the primary lender isn't going to allow a second recorded mortgage, but if you will hold, you know, the homes as collateral, you know, for your second note, you know, we can make this deal work. And then, you know, they will basically have a lien on the titles until we pay them off and we just kind of agree on a payoff schedule.
Yeah, we've been close to that before, but we never kind of went through with it 100%. But we've had some owners that were willing to do it that way, you know, if we could kind of pencil in the rest, you know.
Sure. That makes sense. What mistakes, John, have you made in mobile home park investing that we can learn from?
I was getting a little bit kind of overconfident. You know, once you start getting some traction, you kind of, your confidence kind of builds and you might kind of, you know, get a little too comfortable. A park that we bought, the day we went on site, you know, we should have done a little bit more research as far as occupancy. So we get on site and there's squatters in some of the homes. And so the police show up and basically the police said, you know, you're just going to have to go through the eviction process. We can't prove, you know, what's yeah. what. And there was quite a few on site that we didn't know about. And luckily the owner just happened to pull up that day. He just happened to pull up in his pickup truck, and he vouched for us and said, no, I've never seen those people. They must've just showed up. So the police had, you know, verbal agreement with us and said, you know, give them 24 hours and they will vacate the property, which of course they didn't, you know, we show up the next day, they're still there, but. You know, so I would say, you know, just make sure you get the boots on the ground and maybe knock on a few doors and so on. Don't get too confident once you start getting traction, you know.
Totally. Is there any other, you know, mistakes you made or tips you would give, you know, new operators or passive investors, you know, looking to get in to mobile home park investing?
I think, you know, utilities is kind of the main thing, you know, that can kind of make you or break you. You know, I've seen a lot of parks on septic, which we do own on septic, but they're all a 1-to-1 ratio, you know, and I've seen some that are, you know, 2, 3, 4 homes per tank, you know, and that could kind of potentially be disastrous. We almost went through on a property like that, and we went on site. And the ground is wet, you know, and it's from the tanks. And so we did some research, and those tanks were actually underneath the homes.
Oh,
so So the only way to fix the issue, you would basically have to remove like every other home and install the tank in that vacant lot, you know. So I would say, you know, your water and sewer is probably one of your main things to be aware of, you know.
Yep, that's a really good tip. Yeah, the tanks under the homes is big because it'll limit your financing too. You know, if you would have taken that to the secondary market with a Berkadia or, you know, some of those other bigger groups to try to get financed with Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or CMBS, and they send the engineers out there and do the Alta survey and find out that those tanks are under the home, there goes your shot. You know, they're not going to do that until you fix that whole issue. And they're probably, you know, probably was done this way several years ago. And then, you know, to get it up to code now, to way the code works now, you know, you're going to have more room needed for the leach field and all that. So good deal you found that, you know, before you closed on that one.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's any sure way to find that other than just, like I said, the ground was wet. We had an inspector come out and he noticed, you know, with his scope, he could tell which direction it was going, you know.
Yeah. And I think the health department, you know, because they'd have to pull a permit to install the septic tanks whenever they did it, and they would be able to tell you, okay, the tanks are under the homes, and maybe an Alta survey would bring that up as well. But yeah, I mean, that would be a major issue. We had gas lines that were under like 4 homes in an 80 lot park, and they found it when we went to refi, and we had to get the gas lines rerouted, you know, around the perimeter of those homes, or we couldn't close, you know, our like $20 million refinance loan. Mm. So it was like a big deal, you know, that we didn't know about. So things like that are really important. And thanks for sharing that. John, if you were going to invest passively as like a limited partner into a mobile home park deal, what are the most important things you would look for to, you know, ensure a successful investment?
I mean, of course the property matters, but I mean, just as important, I think, is the sponsor, you know. I would ask for referrals, maybe, you know, who else has invested with this person, you know, how accessible are they? You know, if you wanted to have a conversation with them, you know, are they willing to take the time to, you know, walk you through it, you know, and what are their intentions, you know, are they promising you a, you know, a get rich quick overnight success, or are they realistic about it, that it's kind of a long-term business, you know?
Yeah.
So
real estate in general, right, is like it's a get rich slow, you know, plan. It's not a get rich quick scheme, that's for sure.
Also, you know, just kind of being educated yourself on the business, you know, it wouldn't hurt to, you know, maybe take some kind of, you know, the Frank and Dave or one of the others, you know, kind of educate yourself on the space where you know what you're looking at. Also, you know, I wouldn't just do it blindly, you know.
That's smart. Yeah. If you have the time, you know, there's even a virtual one now, the boot camp.
Yeah.
You can take it virtually, which I think is a great way. If you can squeeze in a couple of days, would be awesome. Hey, I think I noticed your watch. Are you a runner, John?
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of a wannabe runner, but yeah, I do a little, not quite like you are, but yeah, I do.
Is that a Forerunner?
Yeah.
Garmin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice. All right. We got that in common. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of,
I do endurance stuff, but
yeah,
it's fun to just stay in shape, and you know, it's good for the mental health as well.
Yeah, I like it. Like you said, it kind of can clear your mind. You know, you can kind of go out there without any kind of technology buzzing in your ear and just kind of clear your brain. You know,
yeah, which is so important as an entrepreneur to just be able to like have some downtime, come down and just think. You know, be thinking all the time. So that's good. I love that. Yeah, and thank you for those tips. Yeah, how accessible is the GP? You know, ask for referrals, get educated on the MHP space yourself through podcasts like these or through actually taking the Frank and Dave boot camp. I think those are great tips for limited partners looking to invest. John, what do you think the perfect mobile home park looks like in your eyes and why?
Well, I think somebody beat me to it, but I would say one that I just closed on probably, but now the perfect one, I don't think there is an absolute perfect one, but definitely, you know, like I said, utilities, you know, direct bill, sewer, water, you know, wide paved streets, great location. I kind of prefer the secondary market just because I just personally feel like it's people's attitudes are almost a little bit easier. You know, people are not quite as stressed, you know, there's the crime is generally lower and, you know, so I just really like the secondary places, you know? So
yeah,
I would say, you know, man, 100 lots plus, but if you could, if you could find all that, you know.
That sounds pretty good to me. Yeah, I agree. That's a perfect mobile home park but I like what you said there. There's no such thing as the absolute perfect mobile home park. There was a guy that cold called me to try to buy one of my parks, and he was from California. I'll never forget this guy. And I started talking to him, you know, because he was calling me consistently, leaving messages, and I could tell it wasn't like a dialer or recording. Like he was actually like manually dialing and you know, used my name in the voicemail. So I called him and we started talking. And earlier you mentioned the analysis paralysis. This guy, he had never bought a park, but he was doing the cold calls and he had analysis paralysis, and he found a deal in outside of Fort Wayne, Indiana. And it was a great deal, but he was just nervous on it. So I offered to pay him an assignment fee to, you know, to take it over. And I own that park to this day. And it's been an amazing deal.
Yeah.
So it's just that, you know, that analysis paralysis and right place, right time type of thing. You know, there's no such thing as the perfect mobile home park. They're all going to have some bit of hair to it, but is it 80% good enough? If it is, you probably just pull the trigger and you do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. 100%.
That was good. Let's talk about 2024, right? It's June 2024 as we're recording this. Mobile home park investing, you know, affordable housing is in, you know, high demand. But interest rates are high. You know, there's talk of a recession, talk of a soft landing. You know, where do you think the future of mobile home park investing is going?
You know, there's a lot of new people, you know, constantly coming in to the space, you know. And I think some of these properties are probably going to resurface. You know, some of your inexperienced people buying the properties are probably going to come back around at some point, you know. But I mean, I think there's a bright future. There's still always deals to be made, and there's always, I think if you look hard enough, you're always going to find something, you know.
Yeah.
May not be as many, but there's always something if you look hard enough, you know.
Totally. And if you're doing what you're doing, cold calling, going direct, building relationships, there's always going to be opportunities there for sure.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. But it is becoming more and more consolidated. You know, it's not, and people, you know, when people say that, I think it scares some people off maybe, But yeah. I still think there's tons of opportunity because something like 60 to 70% of parks are still owned by mom and pops that only own one or two parks. And not all of them, not all of those baby boomers want to sell today, right?
Yeah.
They're going to be releasing those over the next 5 to 10 years as they decide to retire. So I think there's still going to be opportunities. And if you can get a deal to pencil out today when interest rates are, geez, I think we got a quote for 7.5% interest rate. And that was like our best bet recently from a regional bank. So if you can get deals to pencil out today, I mean, when rates do, you know, go back down, if they do, it's going to be that much better in my opinion. So I think it's, you know, it's a good time, but it's definitely a little bit tougher to get deals to pencil. Yeah. Would you agree?
Yeah, 100%. It's definitely is. One other thing, you know, it's the thing, my opinion about this business is the owners, mom and pop, you know, you can still build a relationship with them and have a shot at, you know, buying their property versus, you know, somebody, especially, you know, the southern mom and pop, you know, they're kind of put off by people from out of their hometown or state, you know, or especially, you know, the Northeast, they're kind of put off by that, you know, so.
Totally.
If you can kind of warm them up, you know, you've got a chance at it, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's a good, you know, good nugget right there. John, what is the biggest threat in your eyes to mobile home park investing?
You know, I think, you know, I was thinking about that earlier. I don't know if it's, you know, government bureaucracy or the media or, you know, unethical operators, but, you know, they're constantly being redeveloped. So I think that might probably be the biggest issue, just redevelopment, you know, and just an entire shortage of the, at least the affordable side, you know, because, you know, they are building new ones, not very many, but I just don't think they're in the affordable category, you know.
That's important. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up because I see, right, I have a bunch of friends that are, you know, developing parks and, and I see, you know, the quality of those. And, you know, when I talk to them, it's like, hey, like, we're not building any mobile home parks unless we can sell the homes in our park for at least $150,000 to $250,000. And to me, that is the opposite of what my parks look like, right? Like, I'm not in that market. I'm in the affordable housing market where some of the homes in our parks cost $8,000 to $10,000, right? And then lot rents $350 a month. And that is just way more affordable than these like luxury style, lifestyle, you know, type of parks that are being built today. But it's kind of like single family housing too, right? Like the developers, if they want to make money, they have to, develop these like more luxury, higher middle class, you know, homes. They're not making money on these small affordable housing subdivisions. They can make more on the higher stuff. So it's definitely a conundrum. I don't have the answers, but I think buying, you know, older value add mobile home parks and filling the vacant lots, rehabbing the vacant homes, every affordable housing unit matters. So I agree. That's a good point. It's a good point on the development. And I agree also on the regulation. I think that's huge. You know, we've seen it in some of the markets that we own, you know, even Iowa, right? Like Iowa, but there were some bad operators that got in there and geez, like Elizabeth Warren is in, you know, talking about, you know, how, you know, operators are being, just not being ethical with their rent increases and things like that. And other politicians have jumped on board. So it's markets you wouldn't even think that would have that kind of, you know, blue influence. They're getting beat up. And we called the Manufactured Housing Association for a deal in Iowa recently and said, hey, this deal, it looks like a nice park, but lot rents are way below market, you know, like, what do you think's the max we could go year one? And they're like, if you go more than $40, you'll be on the front page of the newspaper. So we're like, okay, we're dumping it. That's not going to work for us. So it's just, you got to be aware of those type of things. So there's definitely some regulation in certain states.
So that's what you normally do is you call the your local MHI and ask their opinion on.
We call the association and always ask like, hey, do you know this park? You know, does it have any like history to it? Has anything ever happened here? You know, and you just find, usually it's like random stuff, you know, that you find because they kind of have like some some older folks in the space that have that know all the parks and,
yeah.
and know, oh, this one, you know, had a bad shooting, you know, 5 years ago, or this one, you know, had XYZ happen and the wastewater treatment plant went bad. They just have a general knowledge of a lot of the parks I've found. So it's just part of our DD list is to call the association and just ask if they know anything about it. And they, you'd be surprised the stuff that they know about the parks. So, because they hear about it, right? If somebody ends up on the front page of the newspaper,
yeah,
they're the ones that are involved getting, you know, called by reporters to make comments and so forth. So it's not a good look if people just jack up rates and don't do much else.
Yeah.
You know, well, John, dude, this was a really awesome recording. If any of the listeners would like to get a hold of you, what would be the best way for them to do so?
You could reach me by email. That's jevans@sixrockprop.com. And you can, you know, I'm on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. And you can even call me at 985-318-4498.
Okay, jevans@sixrockprop.com. We'll make sure to put that in the show notes so you can find that there. John, what's one last bit of important advice you would give an interested passive mobile home park investor before we sign off?
Like I said, just, you know, kind of self-educating yourself, you know, Warren Buffett said, invest in what you know, so I wouldn't just go in there blindly, you know, investing because it's, you know, it's the latest thing or the, you know, the hottest trend. I would, you know, do your own research. That way you know what you're looking at, you know.
That's good. Invest in what you know. I love that. John, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
That's it for today, folks. Reminder, please leave a review if you got value out of this show. I really appreciate you all tuning in. Have a good day.
Would you like to see mobile home park value add projects in progress? If so, follow us on Instagram at Passive MHP Investing for photos and awesome videos from our recent mobile home park acquisitions. Once again, that's at Passive MHP Investing on Instagram. See you there.